Welcome to Laudes and Lattes, the podcast where we blend the world of law and business with a warm cup of information and common sense. I'm your host, Sydney Whelan, attorney, real estate investor, and business owner. Each week, we'll be your go-to source for legal insights, business advice, and so much more. Whether you're a seasoned professional, an ambitious entrepreneur, or simply someone seeking guidance, we'll have you covered. From navigating the legal landscape to empowering you with valuable business strategies, we'll explore the legal side of life and enjoy a virtual latte along the way. So grab your favorite latte, get comfortable, and let's dive into Laudes and Lattes. Welcome to episode 6 of Laudes and Lattes. I'm your host, Sydney Whelan. This episode is sponsored by the Whelan Law Firm of Moberly, Missouri. Today, we will explore the world of guardianships and conservatorships and answer some of the questions you might have about this topic. In Missouri, we often talk about guardianships and conservatorships as if they are the same. They are not, and I'll attempt to differentiate the two proceedings as we go along. Both guardianships and conservatorships play a crucial role in safeguarding the rights and well-being of vulnerable individuals, including minors and incapacitated adults. So let's start with the first question. What is a guardianship? Guardianship means the legal authority to make decisions for another person. A guardian is the person appointed by the court to make decisions on behalf of someone else. The person over whom guardianship is granted, whether it's a child or an adult, is often referred to as the ward. This type of proceeding means the guardian is responsible for the well-being and care of the protected person. The guardian will be able to make personal and medical decisions for the person, including healthcare decisions, decisions about where the person will live, and in the case of children, decisions regarding school. A conservatorship is slightly different. So what exactly is a conservatorship? Well, a conservatorship is the legal authority to make financial decisions for another person. And again, this can be for an adult or a child. Although the conservatorship allows the person named as the conservator to make financial decisions for the person, court approval is always needed to spend or sell any of that person's assets. As for minors, normally parents have the legal right to make decisions for their children. A guardianship may be needed, however, for a child if there is no parent available to care for that child. A conservator over a child's assets may be needed if the child inherited assets from a deceased relative, for instance, life insurance or cash accounts. If this is the case, the court may set up a conservatorship for the minor to protect those assets until the child is an adult. A court-ordered conservatorship over a child lasts until the child reaches the age of majority, which is 18 in most states. For adults, a guardianship may be needed if the adult is incapacitated, meaning the person is unable to take care of himself or herself due to mental illness, mental deficiency, disease, or mental incapacity. As we know, adults in this country have legal rights guaranteed by the Constitution to make decisions for themselves. Sometimes this is not possible. Usually it's because a person suffers a physical, mental, or emotional condition that makes it impossible for that person to make sound decisions for themselves. If that is the case, someone else needs to step in to take care of that person. A guardianship over an adult usually lasts until that adult either regains the ability to care for himself or the adult passes away. Guardianships are not always permanent. Let's talk about emergency or temporary guardianships. In Missouri, there are procedures in place that will allow an expedited guardianship proceeding if an emergency situation arises that requires a quick response to protect an at-risk person. If the court determines an emergency exists, the court may issue letters of emergency or temporary guardianships, usually for no more than 90 days, unless that time is extended for good cause by the court. Within that 90-day period, a petition for permanent guardianship may be pursued and granted if sufficient evidence is presented at a full hearing before the court. Now, not everyone who needs a conservator to help with their financial needs also needs a guardian to make personal and medical decisions for them, and vice versa. However, while guardianship and conservatorships can be separate, quite frankly, if a person needs one, usually there is a need for both a guardian and conservatorship. Now, let's talk about the legal process of establishing guardianships and conservatorships. First, to request a guardian or conservatorship of another person, we must file a petition for guardianship and/or conservatorship in the probate court. A guardianship usually must be filed in the county where the incapacitated or disabled person has been living. By requesting a guardianship or a conservatorship over another person, you are essentially requesting the court take away that person's constitutional right to make decisions for themselves. So, because of that, the courts take this very seriously. The process is started by filing the petition or application for guardianship in the probate court in the jurisdiction where the disabled person resides, as we said. As the petitioner or applicant, you must prove to the court that the disabled person is unable to receive and evaluate information or to communicate decisions to such an extent that that person lacks the capacity to meet their essential requirements for food, clothing, shelter, safety, or other care, such that physical injury, illness, or disease is likely to occur. If we are also asking the court to appoint a conservator, you must prove that the disabled person lacks the ability to manage his or her financial resources. In either the guardianship or conservatorship, the person filing the application must also prove that there are no less intrusive alternatives to guardian and conservatorship that are available to provide for that person's care and financial needs. Upon the filing of the petition for guardianship or conservatorship, the court will appoint another attorney to represent the ward or the protectee. That attorney will visit with the ward prior to the court proceedings and may report to the court his or her observations. The attorney appointed for the ward or the protectee is often called the guardian ad litem. It is that person's job to make sure that the ward or protectee's legal rights are protected and that the ward is treated fairly under the law. That person will represent the ward or the protectee in court and has the ability to require or waive that person's presence in court, the ability to question witnesses, and present evidence on behalf of the ward. So, what happens at court? Let's talk about the actual court proceedings. The court will set and hold a hearing to determine the allegations of the petition for guardianship or conservatorship. The court will hear testimony from witnesses and review evidence such as medical records, incident reports, or sworn affidavits. The court will require medical evidence from a physician regarding that person's physical and mental capacity to make their own medical decisions or financial decisions. After reviewing all of the evidence, the court will determine whether the alleged incapacitated person lacks the ability to make his or her own medical decisions, to make placement decisions, to vote, to drive an automobile, and to marry. The judge will determine whether the disabled person lacks the legal ability to handle his or her own financial resources. Sometimes, the court determines that the disabled person may only need help in certain areas. If that is the case, a limited guardianship might be appropriate. Again, if that's the case, the court's order will be very specific and will set out in detail the extent to which that person's rights are limited. In either full guardianship or limited guardianship, the court will also make a determination as to the least restrictive environment that will be appropriate for the ward if the judge determines that a guardianship is appropriate at all. Not everyone who is appointed a guardian or conservator needs institutionalized care. Maybe the person would be able to stay at home if supportive services were available. If there are other less restrictive solutions that are more appropriate for the incapacitated or disabled person, those services should be considered. Those services might mean a meal delivery service to ensure adequate nutrition, or having someone come into the home to help that person manage their medications or assist them with personal care. If you are appointed as someone's guardian and conservator, you have certain legal responsibilities and duties. So what exactly are those duties? First, becoming the guardian over someone's estate does not give the guardian the absolute power to control the protected person's assets and finances. Like I mentioned before, the guardian must get the court's approval before spending any of the person's money or selling any property. And typically, you must put that person's money in a blocked or restricted account where it cannot be accessed without a court order. You are in charge of financial management. At the time of filing your petition for guardian or conservatorship, you are required to submit to a caregiver background screening and a credit history. Depending upon your jurisdiction, you may be required to submit to fingerprinting or to provide a bond. As a guardian, you will have the duty to take charge of the ward and to provide for the ward's care, treatment, habilitation, education, support, and maintenance. It will be your responsibility to assure that the ward lives in the best and least restrictive environment which is reasonably available, assure that the ward receives medical care and other services that are needed, promote and protect the care, comfort, safety, health, and welfare of the ward, and provide required consents, including consents for medical care on behalf of the ward. To the extent possible, you should encourage the ward to participate in those decisions, act on his or her own behalf, and develop or regain the ability to manage his or her own affairs. As guardian, you will be required to file with the court a personal status report updating the information regarding the care, welfare, and placement of your ward. As a conservator, you must take possession of your protectee's property to the extent you are authorized by the court. You must use reasonable efforts to find the income, assets, and liabilities of the protectee. You must identify the needs and preferences of the protectee and work with the guardian and others close to the protectee. You must prepare a plan for the management of those assets and provide oversight of any income and assets under control of the protectee. The property, income, and bank accounts must be kept separate from your own funds, funds that would be in your name as the conservator of the protectee. You must invest the protectee's funds according to the law, and you are personally liable for any imprudent or unauthorized investments. You may only spend the protectee's funds for purposes that are authorized by statute or court order. You may apply for any court order of continuing support and maintenance, authorizing you to spend a budgeted sum each month for the protectee. You will be required to file an annual accounting, usually called a settlement, showing in detail all receipts and expenditures occurring during the preceding year. You must also annually provide the court with the following information: the present address of the protectee, your current address, the services being provided to the protectee, any significant actions taken by you, your opinion as to the continued need for conservatorship and any recommended changes, any compensation request, and a plan for the coming year. Each entry of your annual accounting or settlement must be explained, and each expenditure must be authorized by statute or court order. You may not sell, trade, lease, mortgage, transfer, or discard your protectee's property without court approval, even though the protectee may be your child or other relative. You may not revoke or amend a durable power of attorney, of which the protectee is the principal. Under Missouri law, a conservator who is not a licensed attorney cannot represent the protectee's estate in connection with court proceedings, whether you're appearing in court or preparing pleadings to be filed with the court. You must retain an attorney to perform these legal services that you are required to do. So remember, follow the advice of your attorney. Talk to your attorney before taking any action. And remember, you are under a duty at all times to act in the best interest of your ward or protectee and to avoid conflicts of interest which impair your ability to act. You must also be reasonably accessible to your ward. If you fail to perform any of your duties as guardian or conservator, you are liable to be removed from office and may be held personally liable for any loss or damage sustained by the ward by reason of your failure to act appropriately. In certain cases, the court may require you to post bond in order to serve as the conservator. The court may waive that requirement and expense by placing the funds in a restricted deposit or securing waiver of filing the annual settlement. Your attorney will be able to assist with those issues. In the event the ward dies, or you or the ward move from one address to another, you have a duty to notify the court in writing of such death or new address as soon as possible. Throughout this episode, we have explored the various types of guardianships, legal processes, and rights and responsibilities of guardians and conservators. It is evident that effective guardianship practices are essential for ensuring that those in need receive proper care and protection. It is incumbent upon all of us, including lawmakers, legal professionals, medical providers, caregivers, and communities, to prioritize protections and services for our most vulnerable citizens. We must continue to advocate for and implement practices that safeguard their care and dignity and prevent abuse and provide them with the best quality of life possible. I hope that you have found this episode helpful. As a reminder, if you hit the subscribe button, you will automatically be alerted when a new episode airs. If you enjoyed this episode, please give us a 5-star review and share it with your friends and family. As always, my friends, grab a cup of coffee or your favorite latte, hold your loved ones tight, and have a great week.
This podcast episode contains general information for discussion purposes only. Each case is different and must be judged on its own merits. Missouri rules generally prohibit lawyers from advertising that they specialize in particular areas of the law. This show should not be construed to suggest such specialization. Nothing on this show should be taken as legal advice for any individual case or situation. This information is not intended to create an attorney-client relationship, and the listening or viewing of this podcast does not constitute an attorney-client relationship. The choice of a lawyer is an important decision and should not be based solely upon advertisements.